minimum of research on a case or so with him, talked with him a lot. You know, he was an old prospector and had been injured, as I recollect, up on the Copper River. A very devout person and very sensitive. And it troubled him a good deal to sentence people. It troubled Judge Folta also, but in an entirely different way. And
how did it trouble Judge Folta?
Well, I suspect that he viewed an individual coming before him as, in a large percentage of the cases at least, as a kind of a failure of society. And his attention was more directed toward the circumstances that brought the individual there rather than the individual himself. Mm-hmm. And so and I think the judge had more of a conceptualization of the defendant that's standing there to be sentenced as being a part of society and his effect on society, rather than trying to concentrate on the individual and rehabilitate him.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably after many years, and Judge Folta had been in prosecution and in criminal work for many, many years, you have a tendency to get burned out on rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
Age rehabilitates people a lot more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
They get about so old and they no longer have the energy or ambition to go out and commit further crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I rather suspect so that he was viewing people as what he was going to do. He was considered that in connection with its effect on society in general. Whereas I think Judge Diamond, at least to my observation, was more worried about the individual and the effects on him.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a result, I can remember prosecuting attorneys. Oh well, when Judge Bucklew was prosecuting,
mm-hmm.
One of the things he would do is he would go over to the jail and announce to them that, well, Judge Folta's going to be here in 2 weeks. If you want to plea and get sentenced by Judge Diamond, now's the time. You can ask him, but I think it was probably effective because Judge Folta was regarded as, I think they referred to him as a hanging judge and so forth. When I first arrived in Anchorage, I can remember looking out the window from the judge's office and the gallows, wooden gallows still sitting there. I don't guess they used it. They built it for this fellow and then I forget what happened. Anyway, they didn't hang it. But it was sitting right outside the window.
Where was it?
Let's see, you know where the entry driveway is to the jail now? At, you know, the old jail over there at Federal.
Right, third and...
Yeah, it was right there.
Oh.
So you could look right out Judge Folta's office window and 50 feet away was the gallows.
A constant reminder of nothing else. Oh, dear. Did he ever send... It wasn't in use, though, when you were...
It was waiting, but I think the sentence was... I think the governor... commuted the sentence or something, and it wasn't used.
Uh-huh.
Governors are always able to second guess. They know more than judges.
Was that a problem? Were there a lot of governor pardons or that sort of thing?
Oh, not that I recollect. It's just a general, I suppose it's a necessary safety valve, although it may or may not be used. A great deal of wisdom.
But who were the people in Anchorage when you got here? Who were the lawyers that were here?
Let's see. There's Wendell Kay, of course. Paul Robinson. Ralph Moody. That was Kay Robinson Moody.
Mm-hmm.
And John Mandridge.
Mm-hmm.
and Judge McCarran. And Ray Palmer and Arnold.
Bill Arnold was in Anchorage?
This Arnell? Was a different one.
Is this Arnold or Arnell? Arnell? Is this like Palmer and Arnell? And this is a different Arnold.
You say Palmer? Yes, Palmer, Arnell. Yes, I'm
Arnell.
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
Bill Arnold didn't come up until later. I can remember him trying cases in Juneau.
You can remember.
Yeah.
Tell me about, did he try cases in Juneau?
Yes.
He did.
He was probably of the trial attorneys that I actually saw in action in Juneau.
Uh-huh.
Bill Arnold was the best I ever saw.
Yeah.
He was just beautiful. Just excellent. I had a, you know, he was a very, very effective courtroom presence.
Mm-hmm.
And he, when he put a witness on the stand, of course he was familiar with the community and very, very aware and observant. And the opposition put a witness on the stand, Judge Arnold would know not only the witness and not only know him and his personal history intimately and his wife's history and his cousins, he would know what his father and his grandfather did. And by the time he got through examining the fellow, you would wonder why the other side put him on, you know, because when Judge Arnold finished visiting with him, he was more judge's witness than he was anybody else's. He was just beautiful. I just enjoyed watching him.
Yeah. Did he normally win his cases?
I can only remember. See, I was only there, like I say, maybe about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember him trying one case, but I know, and basically we did not, as a clerk, we didn't, the judge didn't worry about anybody in being in the courtroom on questions of evidence. Judge Folden knew more evidence than
mm-hmm.
he'll ever learn. He knew the very practical applications of evidence, and his rulings on evidence were excellent. So he didn't need anybody to scurry around in the room for evidence. You know, you'd poke your head in the courtroom only once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But he would tell me to come in and watch so-and-so,
mm-hmm.
Because he was interested. The judge always had a great deal more confidence in the young members of the bar than he did in the older ones. One of his sayings was that the only hope of the salvation of the bar is in its young members.
Mm-hmm. Who are the members that he thought were the hope of the bar?
I don't know. He never said.
Could you tell from... was Bill Arnold a young member of the bar then?
No.
I thought so.
No, but he would... Judge Folder would suggest that I poke my head in the courtroom to watch a certain attorney examine a witness or... or a summation or something, but we didn't spend time in the courtroom. You only came in on the invitation of the judge.
Yeah.
That's all. Period.
Who did you see on his invitation?
Well, that's why I remember seeing Mike Monaco and of course the members of the prosecuting attorney's office, Pat Gilmore. Who was an extremely polished trial attorney. And I don't remember I can remember watching Ziegler
mm-hmm.
down in Ketchikan.
This is Robert Ziegler, right?
Not A.H. He was a real old fox.
Mm-hmm.
He was a good one.
Yeah.
And of course Wendell up here.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the defense attorneys dislike Judge Folda, I rather suspect, although I don't think that bothered him too much.
Mm-hmm. He'd been up against a lot of them, hadn't he?
I think some of the older ones, yeah. Yes. You see, he tried cases for many, many years and knew all of the arguments and counter-arguments and so forth. Mm-hmm. He was an experienced trial attorney. I suspect that Wendell Kay once criticized Judge Folta on very valid grounds. He said that he had a tendency to identify with one side of the case or the other before the case is completed, and that by nature he was an advocate, and that he should have gone in private practice, he'd have made millions, mm-hmm. because he was an excellent attorney. I know that Judge Folta thought that Wendell's trial techniques in the courtroom were probably the most effective of any of the bar in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. He, you know, some of them, he would not have kind words to say about their abilities, but not Wendell. And I rather suspect that many judges have that problem of identifying with one side or the other, and it's a very difficult thing not to do. Mm-hmm. And there is a very marked difference between an advocate and the judge, and it's hard to separate those feelings.
What did he ever say anything to you about Grigsby? Did you ever?
Well, Grigsby was the best of the best, of course.
He was.
Yes, and Judge Folda always he had a million stories about Grigsby, mm-hmm. and of course he was the presence. Although, now that you mention it, he had me come over and listen to Grigsby and listened to his closing argument in some case. I can't remember, it was a criminal case anyway. And Folda would just be grinning. Now, they always, you know, said that Judge Folda was trying to help the prosecution because he was prosecution-minded, is what the defense bar used to say. I don't, you know, there are times when that happens. It depends on which side you're identifying with in a particular case. But I can remember him just grinning at something that Grigsby had done in this particular case. And I had listened to the closing arguments, and I didn't, you know, I was just a young kid. I didn't know what to compare, and I didn't have any history of the case. And I didn't think that Grigsby said hardly anything. Mm-hmm. And kind of visited and didn't say what it was he was talking about. And I said that to Judge Folda when the jury had been kicked out to deliberate, and he said, "You watch, though, he's going to win." Mm-hmm. And that's the mark of trial attorneys, whether or not he wins. And Grigsby knew just what he was doing, and of course, he was an extremely able trial attorney.
Did you see him after that, too, Grigsby?
Oh, yes. He used to come over to the city court, even. You know, he'd try anything. He'd try anything.
Mm-hmm. So he just liked to be in court?
He was a trial attorney.
Did you work with, how long did you work with Barry Plummer?
Let's see. Maybe like 3 years, maybe.
So from 53 to 56?
I would guess that. But then, see, I got an office across the hall from him. We still traded cases back and forth, and it's hard for me to remember. So practice as a sole practitioner for a fair amount of time, and Ray sent me cases, you know, mm-hmm. and so forth.
A lot of lawyers were involved in politics. That was a
mm-hmm.
why and what and did you ever get involved in politics?
Not really. Because the family in the area that I come from is Republican. Mm-hmm. I mean Republican. I can remember we were driving over to Lake Ontario from the farm, and I can remember sitting on the particular side of the car so I could look out the window when we went by this one farm over near Fairhaven, which was about 20 miles from home, to see if I could see this fellow, because they said he was a Democrat, but there weren't any other Democrats. They were Republican with Lincoln in that country. So anyway,
they were Lincoln Republicans, is that?
Oh, yes.
Is that what it is?
Uh-huh. And when I got up here, Ray Plummer was in politics, and that was okay. Enough, you know. Yeah. Ray was running for Democratic National Committeeman. In order to be able to vote for him, I registered as a Democrat, which was, I could tell you my Republican story about William Jennings Bryan back at the turn of the century. You know, one of his campaigns for the presidential nomination, you know, running as the great Democrat, you know, the cross of gold and the crown of thorns and so forth. And he was a tremendous orator. And he came into Auburn, New York, to give a speech on one of his presidential campaigns, and they timed the speech, of course, in the late evening after the farmers had finished the evening chores. And so they drove in, and my father drove in to see what a Democrat looked like, because they literally had never seen one. And you know, they, at that time they had gas lights along the streets, and they had the bonfire and so forth, and all of the teams were hitched up to the hitching racks. The old racks still used to be there. And Auburn, Brian chose as the place where he's going to give his speech, Seward Park. Of course, William Henry Seward was one of the founders of the Republican Party. His name was still on the office door. I can remember seeing it many times. So anyway, there's a statue of Seward in Seward Park. And Brian, you know, he comes striding through the crowd with a little escort. Dad said he's a very short individual. You could hardly see his head bobbing up and down behind the others, you know. And when he got there, all the old farmers standing around their overhauls. And when he got to the statue, he jumped up on the pedestal, and Dad said his opening words were, "If the cold stone lips of William Henry Seward could speak to you tonight, he'd say the Republican Party is corrupt."
Must have got over big.
Yeah, he went right out and got him, you know, just...
So we're in politics in Alaska. Did you ever get involved in politics?
I ran for election a couple of times for the municipal magistrate of Anchorage when it was an elective position back under the territorial court system. You had a city court with an elective judge.
Mm-hmm.
And George McLaughlin had been the judge. And it was a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week operation.
Mm-hmm.
You were the judge, and you had to be available, of course, to make bail at all times. So anyway, once in a while, George would want to go take a vacation or something for a few days, and and he had employed me to take over when he was gone. Mm-hmm. And I'd done that several times. It was a princely position. It paid $200 a month. Mm-hmm. And you held court every day. And anyway, toward the end of one of his terms, George was very political, mm-hmm. very Irish politician. Mm-hmm. He somehow or other wrangled having me appointed to fill the remainder of his term. He resigned on the theory that then whoever was there might be elected again, and that's about the way it worked. I was elected a couple of times. Mm-hmm. So I was over there for quite a while.
Why were lawyers so involved? There were so many that were involved. Any kind of feeling for why they all had their fingers in politics?
Well, you mean you want a personal philosophy of why this happens?
Yes, a personal philosophy.
I suspect.
Your own suspicion.
I suspect. They sometimes say that Cornell attorneys are often philosophical, mm-hmm. but you go into the practice of law, if you come in as innocently as I do, and you have some kind of a notion that perhaps you can accomplish some good for some indefinite group or groups or individuals, and in the wear and tear of practice, a certain amount of that gets worn away, mm-hmm. and there's a certain amount of frustration perhaps that builds up, because you really don't accomplish all of the earth-shattering things that you had perhaps anticipated. And I think there's a tendency to try to turn into a different field where there is power, and where perhaps you can try again, or maybe it's a sublimated result of not being particularly satisfied in private practice. But I think many attorneys are still idealistic and they go into politics, and it takes a certain number of years before they realize that it's no different there and perhaps worse. Mm-hmm. Others merely go into politics because it would be good to attract clients and perhaps even good to serve clients if you had power in certain positions. I know over the years that certain attorneys from time to time with whom we have been in an adverse position and who were in politics somehow or other have had a statute changed or something like that that would mm-hmm. make their life easier in response to the positions that had developed in the case. So I suspect that perhaps others do it with different motives.
Yeah. Did this kind of statute changing and that sort of thing, has it gotten worse or better as time goes on? Can you see any?
Oh, I think it's much worse because
it's much worse.
Oh yeah, there are more people in general. There's much mm-hmm. more manifestation of lobbying efforts at that level. Mm-hmm. There's so much flack going up in Juneau that much more things can get through without being seen, I think, and without being understood. Everything is disguised, of course, in the legislative process, and that's an overstatement, but many things are disguised in the legislative process. If you have the time and the don't have too broad a range of subjects, you can figure out the disguise and figure out what's going on. I can remember once listening to the arguments on what should be the opening date of the crab season in the Kodiak area. And I was on the board of Fish and Game, and these gentlemen are talking about if you open the season too early, the crabs have not filled out their shells, and the percentage of waste is terrible because they haven't fattened out. There's just a skinny amount of meat inside the shell and so forth. Too early in the season. You wait later, take that same crab a month or 6 weeks later, and you know, I forget now what the percentage of recovery, but you take a live crab and weigh them, and then you weigh the meat when you get through discarding the shuck and the offal and on and on and on. And it's a very small percentage of the overall. Maybe it's like 15-18% of a crab is usable meat. And their argument was that you wait another 6 weeks or so and you will get 24-25%, you see. And then the next group of gentlemen have all of these facts and figures about how they have already started and have kept very close account, and they've fished these crab. And if you open the season the last week in September, the recovery rate is just as good on an average as it would be if you opened it 6 weeks later. And you're faced with a dilemma. And the only way to explain it is if you're sufficiently acquainted with the industry and the people involved, you'll notice that every one of the individuals who argued for an earlier opening own and operate and are very experienced fishermen of relatively small boats. All of the very experienced fishermen and knowledgeable people who wanted the late opening were operating big boats that can operate in rough water, and the crab migrate from the shallow to the deep water in September, you see? Mm-hmm. And so everything is disguised, but when it comes down to the decision, it's are the big boat operators or the little boat operators going to get the crab? That's what you're talking about.
Right.
I think that nowadays they're so... The government is into so many things in Juneau that it's hard for everyone to understand what the disguise is. And of course, we've got more sophisticated. They can. It's not always as simple as who's got the big boat and who's got the little boat and who can operate in the rough water offshore later in the year. So that's why I think more things slip through.
That just has to bring me to W.C. Arnold and his lobbying in the early years. Is that the kind of thing that he did? What was his...
Oh, Bill, of course, knew the fishing industry inside out and knew all of the industry and all of its ramifications, and was, you know, he was a very able individual and had a great control of facts. And took the time and trouble to study all of the facts. I can remember trying a little tax assessment appeal on one of the canneries down in Bristol Bay with Judge Arnold. And the borough assessor had assessed the property, on its reconstruction value or something like that. And Judge Arnold could tell you that, yes, you know, the walls in this office in this old cannery, which hasn't been used in 18 seasons, are paneled with teak, you know, and this, that, and the other thing. He would tell you the Scandinavian carpenters, ship's carpenters from the old days that worked on the construction of that cannery, and when this went in and when that went in, and so forth, knew all of the background history and when it was that the channel of the Naknek River eroded and the water went away from the cannery and it's now unusable, and that it's not proper to talk about reproduction costs for what is in effect a white elephant. And can't be used, hasn't been used, cannot be renovated, and it's just sitting there. You know, there's no water, and it can't be operated. And even if you had the water, the system is now so outdated that you no longer have these long lines of Chinese workers who are going to be able to operate this machinery. So it's a very, very thorough presentation. it's always a joy to participate in a case with Bill Arnold, from my point of view anyway, and I've been on both sides of cases with him and against him. I haven't seen Bill probably in a couple of years, and I suspect that, like all of us, he's has less memory than he used to have, but he was a fearsome trial attorney, did not go to trial often, didn't have to.
What happened as statehood approached to what he was doing, and how did he...
Oh, I don't know how much effect statehood in and of itself had on Bill and his practice. I suspect that when there was a gradual and uneven transfer of control from the federal level and the federal bureaucracy, or at least sections of control, to the state, but much of the state personnel, many of the state personnel, were just transferred from the federal. And so they may have been a new title, but it was the same old face, and the same problems were there. And then after a relatively short period of time, the nature of government being what it is, that transfer started going back again, and has accelerated now to the point where for practical purposes, you better deal with the federal. And I don't know if Bill had to learn any new names or new faces. He was a very, very effective lobbyist, of course. Knew his industry so that he was able to discern what would make an important difference for his particular interest.
Who was he allied with in Juneau? Who did he lobby with or lobby to?
I don't know, because I think, let's see, the legislature was in session two times, I believe, during the time that I was in Juneau. And I never went near the legislature. I never got off on that floor. Judge Folda's clerks always walked the stairs. They never took the elevator. So the only thing I knew about the legislature was when I rounded the landing. Sometimes you would see them in various attitudes up and down the hallway. But I wasn't really so interested in the legislature or the members. I remember Wendell Kay was down there. Ken Johnson, he's now deceased, died many years ago of cancer. I really don't know.
What did you like about the practice when you first came up? What were the things that you...
Oh, golly, I don't know if there was anything particular that I about the practice. I suppose, again, it's a matter of mental set. I've always preferred to defend. That's a lot, it's just a mental quirk, I suppose. It's part mechanistic, but it's easier for me to attempt to envision what the other side is going to argue and formulate answers to those arguments. It just is a natural thing, so I prefer to defend cases as a matter of going first. I've always thought that there was an affinity between civil defense and criminal prosecution, and the majority of the work that I have done going first is would have been as a prosecutor in nickel and dime misdemeanor and city offense cases over in the old city court. I prosecuted over there for a while. But other than that...
You prosecuted in the city court for a while? Were you city attorney?
Oh, I suppose I was city prosecutor. I guess I was an assistant city attorney. I don't know what the title was.
Who else was in the office?
Oh, let's see. Over the years, there were several. Dick Gantz, of mm-hmm. course. One of them, probably at least from a civil trial point of view, Dick Gantz probably the finest practicing attorney in Alaska today, mm-hmm. in my opinion. And he did a beautiful job for the city. City government was never better run than it was when Dick Gantz was there. Harlan Davis worked out of the office with Dick Gantz.
What year is this?
It had been before statehood. That's the only thing that I can remember. And up to probably after. Right through that period of time, as I recollect.
Did you have a lot of cases in the commissioner's court? Is that where they were?
No, it was city court. City court was not commissioner's court. It was a
municipal court. Okay, and that's what you were magistrate of, the city court.
I was magistrate there for, 2-year terms? Let's see. So I served... a while, the end of one of George McLaughlin's terms, maybe 6-8 months, maybe it was a year, I don't know. And then I served 2 years of a term, and then I was reelected, served another year, and then I think the court system was unified. And
so from about 56, 57 to
57, 8, 9, somewhere there. Mm-hmm. See, it took a year or so before they set up this unified court system.
Yeah. Did you practice in front of Judge McCary?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What was it like?
I never tried a jury case in front of him. Argued motions and stuff. Yes, I think, yes, we did. We tried jury cases. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can
mm-hmm.
you compare him to Fulton?
Well, they were both judges.
Oh. You don't have to compare him to Fulton.
I just did.
That's the comparison.
No, it was different.
Yeah.
It was different. And who is to say that either one was right?
Something
else. Yeah, the quality of justice doesn't stand or fall in a single case, except in the eyes of the individual involved at that time. Mm-hmm. So I never had any great problem with Judge McCary. I know it was for a long time popular to criticize him, but if you look at the end result of his decisions, mm-hmm. I don't think that it was all that far wrong. Well, yeah, most people have a kind of a basic sense of fairness, and I'm sure that Judge McCary does. And if you approach from the end result rather than how you get there, there's probably a lot less criticism of the person who's honestly attempting. To do what's fair. I think I can remember arguing a motion before Judge McCary, which was opposed by Ed Boyko.
Mm-hmm.
And after the usual spirited words, Judge McCary pronounced this decision. And as we left the courtroom in the old federal building, around the hall, Ed says to me, "Well, how does it feel to win for the wrong reason?" But I don't know if a judge has to know all of the law in the world. Uh-huh. There's a kind of a basic element that's incorporated in the concept of being a judge, which requires that you have some judgment. Mm-hmm. So far as I've been able to discern, that's not a qualification that is tapped on the bar polls.
Did you ever run for judge or run for judge?
Let's see, I was a candidate for an appointment once. Mm-hmm. I was cured, you know.
You were cured.
It was just an aberration. And I didn't travel around the countryside and you know, do all of the little political things that you do for this non-political appointment. However, I think, let's see, like two names went up to Governor Egan. That's my recollection, that the Judicial Council, in sending the names up, had some plan in mind. And for some reason best known to themselves, they desired to have me appointed. Excuse me. They sent up my name, and I think they sent up the name of another candidate that the bar poll had rated very low. I think the lowest of everybody, if I recollect correctly. Obviously, the attorneys didn't know him or didn't know me, one or the other. And maybe both. But the council sent up my name, and I had run, apparently, at least better. And Governor Egan was governor at the time. And Governor Egan was not then, and perhaps not now, an individual who was particularly enamored of attorneys as a profession or attorneys as individuals. And the word that I received was to the effect that Governor Egan was an astute politician, and he very quickly saw that the Judicial Council had attempted to deprive him of his right to exercise a choice by sending up what on the face was a satisfactory candidate and an unsatisfactory one. Mm-hmm. And so he fixed him, he appointed the unsatisfactory one. Turned out he was a fine judge. No. Mm-hmm. But that cured me. I can remember I was driving my car to work at the time, and I had been sincerely worried ever since they sent the names up that I was going to be appointed, and I really wasn't all that fascinated with the idea of going on the bench. And I heard the announcement over the radio that the governor had appointed the other candidate, and I can remember pulling over the side of the road. That was how I found out, you know, he didn't
call you
call me or anything like that. No, that would have been... I can remember pulling over the side of the road and heaving a sigh of relief. And I haven't ever suffered from that since.
Yeah. That wasn't very gentlemanly, not even to call before.
No? They didn't have personal interviews or anything because they knew each other, you see. Judge Moody was Attorney General. Shortly before that. Mm-hmm. And this may not be an accurate reflection of how Judge Moody would recollect this, But my recollection is that Ralph was perhaps tired of living in Juneau, mm-hmm. and he perhaps wanted to return to Anchorage and maybe even the private practice or go on the bench or something. And so he wanted to no longer be Attorney General. Mm-hmm. And apparently he was given Governor Egan's permission to resign, provided he found some other person to replace him. And so he was scratching around the bottom of the barrel. I remember him coming up and asking me, and I told him I would be interested if I could continue to live in Anchorage, but I didn't want to, I had a home here and a practice here, and I didn't want to go down to Juneau and start all over again in Juneau for a couple of years until he got thrown out. So he talked George Hayes into it. But anyway, I've always liked Ralph, and I've gotten along with him. I think I offered at that time that if he wanted to get out and go into private practice, let me know if he wanted to partner, you know. Yeah. But so far as being Attorney General, that requirement of living in Juneau was more than I was prepared to do. Not that I dislike the community or the people or anything. It's simply a matter of how many times you're going to relocate. And I was just getting nicely settled in up here so that I knew some people.
When did you move to Wasilla or have a home out here?
Let's see. We've been here about 9 years, I think it is, though. Uh-huh. Patty, how long have we been here?
9 years.
And you see?
So did you live in Anchorage for a time between them?
Yes, I lived in Anchorage